There we are, 7 past the hour. Hello. Yeah, the singer there, Friday's My Day. Wasn't a good day for Anwar al-Awlaki today, was it? I got some things to say about that. The news, of course, is that it's reported that Anwar al-Awlaki, an American citizen, was hit by a missile fired from a drone aircraft operated by his own government. Another U.S. citizen apparently was killed with him, Amir Khan. The Obama administration argued that al-Awlaki had joined the enemy in wartime. Of course, we're not really at war, are we? But let me go on. And last year, Mr. Obama quietly decided that al-Awlaki could be targeted for death like any other al-Qaeda leader. It is unclear whether the same determination had been made about the other American killed in the same strike, Samir Khan. Certain libertarians, you know, the usual crowd of hand-wringers here in the United States, question how the government could take an American citizen's life based on murky intelligence and without an investigation or trial. And these hand-wringing libertarians, civil libertarians, of course, claim that hunting and killing him would amount to summary execution without the due process of law guaranteed by the Constitution. And as the New York Times reported, with the help of the American Civil Liberties Union, Mr. al-Awlaki's father, a former agriculture minister and university chancellor in Yemen, had challenged the administration's decision to place his son on the kill list. But the lawsuit was thrown out in federal court in Washington. Later this afternoon, after this was announced, and by the way, did you see the video? There was a ceremony for retiring chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, in the Rose Garden, I guess. And when Obama announced that this man had been killed, there was applauding. You see that? Now, what is the difference between that and applauding for Rick Perry when it's announced that he ordered the execution of 243 people, or when someone in the audience at one of those circle jerks screams out, "Let him die," when Ron Paul is asked a question about somebody who is in a coma and has no health insurance? What do you do? So now it's, of course, in plain sight in the Rose Garden. Hey, we're becoming a hell of a country. We really are. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution says that no American shall be, quote, deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, end quote. That used to mean a trial and conviction before the government can execute an American. Now, the The CIA takes credit for this. Officials said that every name added to the kill list undergoes a careful, secret, legal review. Well, right there. Is something in the Constitution about a public, speedy trial? So, a secret. I want to hear from you people who continue to support Barack Obama. In a manner of speaking, I really don't want to hear from you, because if you continue to support him, I don't understand at all. And I'll get into that a little bit deeper in the program. As the Times says, one complicating factor is that the precedents, mainly the precedents of killing American citizens, assassinating, extrajudicial killing, no arrest, no charge, no due process, just kill him. Just find him and execute him. Find him and execute him. American citizens, just kill him. One complicating factor in that, in the fact that we do it, is that the precedents that are usually cited mainly involve the military detention of Americans who sided with the enemy during World War II, not the killing of an American in what can only charitably be described as a highly unconventional war. A lot of people don't accept this really as a war. This is, I don't know what it is, because some politician declares a war on terror, that doesn't mean a goddamn thing. We have, you know, words have meanings, or they used to, let me rephrase it. Words used to have meanings attached to them in this country. You know, George Bush was right when he said the Constitution is a goddamn piece of paper. We might as well burn it. Let's just burn it. Burn it up. Throw it away. Alaki was born in New Mexico in 1971. His father was a graduate student in agricultural science. He moved to Yemen with his parents at the age of seven, attended school in that Muslim country, where he later told friends he had been thrilled by tales of Yemeni men fighting the Russians in Afghanistan. At 19, he was sent back to the United States to attend Colorado State University. He completed an engineering degree, but by then he had discovered that he had a knack for preaching. In the little mosque in Fort Collins, he became the imam in mosques in Denver, San Diego, and the Virginia suburbs of Washington, yada, 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 yada. Though he denounced the September 11 attacks in this country, he was angered by what he thought was the anti-Muslim government investigations in the months that followed. And he moved to London and eventually to Yemen, where he was imprisoned in 2006 and 2007. In a 12-minute video or audio statement released in March 2010, Mr. Alaki spoke directly about his feelings as an American, posing his own evolving views as a model for others. Here's what he said, quote, "With the American invasion of Iraq and continued U.S. aggression against Muslims, I could not reconcile between living in the U.S. and being a Muslim. And I eventually came to the conclusion that jihad against America is binding upon myself, just as it is binding on every other Muslim." And then he added this, "To the Muslims in America, I have this to say. How can your conscience allow you to live in peaceful coexistence with a nation that is responsible for the tyranny and crimes committed against your own brother and sisters? How can you have your loyalty to a government that is leading the war against Islam and Muslims?" So it is now apparently acceptable to exit. Well, you know, people are going to say, "Well, Malloy, come on, goddamn, what are you talking about here? You're talking about somebody who is actively planning destruction in the United States, really?" And that comes, that information comes from where? Comes from whom? Oh, you mean he advocated? Is there a difference between planning and advocating? Is there a difference between doing and talking about? Are we into thought crime? Are we into, you know, as much as Americans may hate someone like Alaki, he was an American citizen. Now, that, you know, doesn't mean anything anymore, does it? I have something for you when you come back that I hope will make you consider the execution today, the assassination today of the man that is referred to as the most dangerous terrorist on earth. Just stick around.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, let me just give you something to compare and contrast. I went to the ACLU website today because they seriously and heavily objected to the killing of U.S.-born Muslim Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen, the U.S. citizen. ACLU said Obama does not have the authority to kill an American without due process of law. Yeah, right. The ACLU deputy legal director said the targeted killing program violates both U.S. and international law. As we've seen today, this is a program under which American citizens, far from any battlefield, can be executed by their own government without judicial process and on the basis of standards and evidence that are kept secret, not just from the public, but from the courts. The ACLU said the government only has the authority to kill Americans when a threat is imminent. Blah, 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 blah. Ben Wisner, litigation director of the ACLU's National Security Project, added, if the Constitution means anything, it surely means that the president does not have the unreviewable authority to summarily execute any American whom he concludes is an enemy of the state. Now, I went, like I said, I was at the ACLU website and read all this. Then I went down below where the comments are posted. And, there was the usual right-wing drivel attacking the ACLU and, more or less defending the action, not defending Obama, but defending the action that was used against Awlaki to kill him. And a matter of fact, even praising whoever it was that ordered the drone missile strike, who pulled the trigger and so on and so forth. And they were typical, the comments were typical anti-civil liberties, as you usually find from right-wing morons. However, what if the U.S. government targeted and killed a Christian American citizen in the same matter? In the same manner, I should say. For example, I wondered how many of these right-wingers forget or weren't born when the wife and the son of an anti-government activist, former Green Beret, and white supremacist Randy Weaver. Remember him? Ruby Ridge, Idaho? Remember that? When his wife and son were shot down by FBI or somebody, sharpshooters, because he wouldn't come out of his house or he wouldn't surrender or what have you, and he was executed on the spot. Remember the howling? Or Weaver wasn't executed, but his wife and one of his sons was executed. Remember the howling from the right-wingers? Let me ask you bastards, what's the difference between the killing today and the killing back then? What is the difference between the execution of Randy Weaver and the execution of Awlaki? Now, somebody might say, well, come on, Mike. He was told to come out. There were complaints against him. It's just like, why did the ATF destroy the Branch Davidian complex and execute how many people, women and children and men, who were totally innocent of anything except the craziness of religion? But there they were. It doesn't make any difference. So what's the difference? Does somebody explain the difference to me? And before someone says, well, there was an arrest trying to go down, there is, that's the difference, Mike. Is that reason to summarily execute Randy Weaver's wife? Were they trying to arrest her? Were they trying to arrest his son? I'd like to know why the right-wingers who went to the ACLU website today, and the ACLU came out, I believe, if so long ago, wasn't it, totally against what ATF did at the Branch Davidian complex in Waco. Remember that? So you right-wingers, tell me the difference. So surely there must be one. What is the difference between the murder of Awaki today, in somebody else's country, by the way, and the murder of Randy Weaver's wife in Idaho? Tell me the difference. Somebody, please send me an email. I'm not going to take your call. I don't like to listen to you people. But send me an email. Any one of you right-wingers who love to monitor this program and call me a son of a bitch and a traitor, and you're going to rappel into my backyard like SEAL 16. You know, I'm always waiting for that. You better be quick, sucker. You better be quick. But so just tell me the difference. Randy Weaver and Al Awaki were both American citizens, right? Both of them were considered terrorists by the U.S. government, right? Both of them were considered big enough threats that there were warrants out or something out for them. There were hit teams out to get them, right? So why are you white right-wingers going to the ACLU website or any website today applauding the assassination of an American citizen? Did you applaud when Randy Weaver was executed? Or Randy Weaver's wife was executed? Did you? You phony, hypocritical sons of bitches.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. 25 before the hour. Well, you know, they're just terrorists, right? Wonder when the time is going to come when definition of terrorism broadens out a little bit, and you don't have to be a Muslim in Yemen or someone not even on the FBI's 10 most wanted list hiding in Abbottabad, Pakistan, to be executed. Just, I guess I shouldn't say executed. That implies some kind of legal procedure. Assassinate, murdered. Vincent Warren is the executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, which had previously brought a challenge in federal court to the legality of the authorization to target U.S. citizen Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen. And according to the Institute for Public Accuracy, he said today, quote, "The assassination of al-Awlaki by American drone attacks is the latest of many affronts to domestic and international law. The targeted assassination program that started under President Bush and expanded under the Obama administration essentially grants the executive the power to kill any U.S. citizen deemed a threat. without any judicial oversight or any of the rights afforded by our Constitution. If we allow such gross overreaches of power to continue, we are setting the stage for increasing erosions of civil liberties and the rule of law. And quote Vincent Warren. Sheila Carapicho is the author of Civil Society in Yemen, The Political Economy of Activism in Modern Arabia. She's also a professor of political science and international studies at the University of Richmond. And until recently, she was visiting at the American University in Cairo. Carapicho said today, quote, "This is an extrajudicial execution of an American citizen for allegedly inspiring crimes allegedly committed by Nidal Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter, and Farouk Abdul Muttalab, the underwear bomber, both of whom remain suspects awaiting trial in the United States. Such an action further weakens the rule of law and military restraint in Yemen. Furthermore, it might add fire to combustible fuel on the ground. Americans should at least refrain from cheering. Furthermore, at a time when the Obama administration is purportedly urging Yemen's physically and politically disabled president to acquiesce to popular demands that he step aside, this incident allows President Saleh to brag to his people about his close alliance with the United States against Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. Nidal Malik Hassan, who is charged with murdering 13 people, I think it's 13, at Fort Hood, and who categorically stated why he did it, declared himself guilty, and declared himself an agent of God, Allah, I don't know. And Umar Abdul Muttalab, the so-called underwear bomber who wanted to blow up an airplane over Detroit and nothing happened. Both of these men are being held in American prisons. One of them, I realize he is due his due process and he will get it, Hassan. But I think we can all agree that it appears that he was guilty. So these two are awaiting processing through the American judicial system, criminal justice system. So why not Anwar al-Awlaki? What was so different about him that he had to be murdered? As far as anyone can tell, he was a talker. He might have even been an organizer. These two people say that we have in prison say they were inspired by him, or at least those are the media reports. I have no idea what Hassan or Mutu, what's his name, Abdul Muttalab. I don't know what their thoughts are, what they've said about Al-Awlaki. I have no idea. But that's what we are being told, that Al-Awlaki was the inspiration to these two, one of whom murdered 13 of his comrades at Fort Hood, and the other who tried, apparently, or it appeared he tried, to blow up a jetliner as it was landing in Detroit. But they are being afforded constitutional protections guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution. They will be brought to trial. And they will either be found guilty or innocent, and they will either, in Hassan's case, a good chance that he will be executed, and a good chance in the other man's case, Abdul Muttalab, that he will not be. But Awlaki, he's dead. Decision was made by the President of the United States to okay his execution today. And the CIA, which seems to be doing an awful lot of killing lately, don't they? I mean, Jesus, God, they really, they carried out the hit. So maybe none of this bothers you. Maybe you just think to yourself, well, come on, boy, for Christ's sake. Do you know who you're talking about here? Do you know what kind of people you're talking about? Yeah. All I need to know is that the guy murdered today was an American citizen, and as such, he had, whether I like him or don't like him, whether I know about him or don't know about him, he is, now I realize I'm sounding very naive here tonight, that due process, should be afforded to every American. And what does due process mean? We just had an execution here in Georgia, a legal execution of a man who insisted up to the moment they plunged the poison into his body that he was innocent. And, well, you know, the particulars, enough that you need to know, just like enough I need to know about Troy Davis, the execution of Troy Davis. So, I don't mean to sound really naive, but at the very least, you can say that Troy Davis had a 20-year-long trial. Now, in my opinion, the results of that trial were wrong. I do not believe that he was guilty of capital murder. Alaki, I don't know. All I know is that he did not have a trial. He was accused of certain things, I guess. I mean, that's what I'm being told. They put some videos out where he is advocating violence. So now, and starting with the Bush crime family, the president of the United States can now decide. Now, do you think this is okay? Al-Maliki got what was coming to him, right? Huh? That's got to be the general consensus. It was in the Rose Garden today when people applauded this killing. Jesus Christ. Is there any way people would just be quiet? I think it even surprised Obama. When he made the announcement, he stopped reading his speech or his announcement and looked a bit nonplussed. I don't know. You can look at the tape or the video. It's there someplace. I saw it tonight on the news. Clap, 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 pause. Ugh. So who makes these decisions? Who is an enemy of the state to such a degree that we can find them via drone aircraft, and then somebody in Bethesda, Maryland, or Fort Worth, Texas, or someplace in Montana brings it up on a computer screen and then pushes a button, and within milliseconds, the guy's dead. I mean, is that okay with you, Mr. and Ms. American? I mean, is that all right? Is that in keeping with the, you know, I listen to the right-wingers, especially the right-wingers, talking about, go back to the Constitution. Really? Well, then I think every Republican candidate tonight will be out on the street protesting this murder today, right? It's in violation of the Constitution, isn't it? Now, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. It doesn't make any difference, what I say on this 25-cent radio program. I just found the whole thing today extremely disturbing and further proof that anyone who thinks Barack Obama is a civil libertarian or a liberal or progressive, you're out of your goddamn mind. He is as much of a killer and a tool of the capitalist establishment as George Bush. Even more so, because Obama is an educated man. You don't agree with that, do
you? Welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Now, it would be very disingenuous of me and probably very hypocritical and maybe make some listener to this program say, oh, Jesus, Malloy, you just lost your credibility with me. But I'm gonna risk all that and take the chance anyway. At the FoxNews.com website, back in October of last year, there's an article there by Catherine Herridge, and the headline is exclusive, Al-Qaeda leader dined at the Pentagon just months after 9/11, and it's about Anwar al-Awlaki. And it says he may be the first American on the CIA's kill list, but he was also a lunch guest of military brass at the Pentagon within months of the September 11 terror attacks. Fox News has learned documents exclusively obtained by Fox, including an FBI interview conducted after the Fort Hood shooting in November 2009, state that Awlaki was taken to the Pentagon as part of the military's outreach to the Muslim community in the immediate aftermath of the attacks. The incident was flagged by a current Defense Department employee who came forward and told investigators she helped arrange the meeting after she saw Awlaki speak in Alexandria, Virginia. According to the documents obtained as part of an ongoing investigation by Fox News, there was a push within the Defense Department to reach out to the Muslim community. Quote, at that period in time, the Secretary of the Army, redacted, was eager to have a presentation from a moderate Muslim, end quote. In addition, Awlaki was, quote, was considered to be an up-and-coming member of the Islamic community after her vetting by the woman who came forward. Awlaki was invited to and attended a luncheon at the Pentagon in the Secretary of the Army's Office of Government Counsel, end quote. And it goes on. It just goes on and on. So now we now we get into the area of what was Awlaki's role where it concerned the CIA. Was he an asset? Was he somebody that all of a sudden had to be disposed of? I don't know. Why am I quoting an article on Fox News website? I don't know. But is there a chance, you know, false flag, double agent, watch this hand while the other one slides a shiv into your back? I don't know anymore. Do you, Truth Seeker? Is everything as it's reported? Was Fox News crazy? Is Obama crazy? Was Awlaki crazy? Are you crazy? I mean, go ahead. Somebody sort all this out for me. But when you have a guy who goes from being an invited guest by the Pentagon brass, if it's true, who knows, to being number one, what did Obama say today? Or somebody said the most, I think it was Obama, the most dangerous man on earth was assassinated, was killed today, or however it was worded. And then we find out, we reference back a little bit and find out that Awlaki was at one time, anybody got any ideas? And as Reg writes, the U.S. does everything that we accuse al-Awlaki of having done, although there's no evidence that this clown, and that's what he was, ever killed anyone. We run covert military operations all over the world, including Yemen. We recruit people in other countries to overthrow their own governments. We torture, rendition, and kill people at will in nations all over the world. But we may, and people we don't like may not. American exceptionalism gives us that right. We are the best. We are the greatest. We are the righteous. Bullcrap. Reg. So I don't know. I've said many times on this program about many different, about the whole general, the direction of this program. We don't have any answers. Don't claim to. There are no answers. There are, but I mean, there's no way that you and I could ever get to any truths any longer. The system is so befouled by the military-industrial complex, by the national security state, by the corporate-slash-capitalist engineers of all this who have built their fortunes on putting everyone else in debt and printing phony money. I mean, come on. Did you ever stop and think maybe when you sit down by yourself sometime and have a Jack Black and water or drink a cup of tea or whatever, and you're by yourself, your partner's gone, your spouse, your kids, your grandkids, your nieces, nephew, whoever. You're all by yourself. You ever sit down, since you are someone who pays attention to what's going on, and you're aware that you have the right-wing fringe in this country, and then you have everybody else, we think, and you ever stop down and think, sit down and think to yourself, maybe some of these right wingers, no, couldn't be. Okay, maybe some of the fringe people, no. And then you have another sip and you sit there and it starts to occur to you that maybe some of the people that you categorically just discount, you know, what you say doesn't amount to squat, just might be onto something. Do you ever think that? Does that ever pop into your head? I know if it does, you chase it out immediately, just like I do, because, you know, those people are crazy, right? Just asking. Murder of Alaki, I'm sorry, today. This is from CB, who writes, one thing we do know is that convicted is not a term that's used, not even charged with, where it concerns his killing today. From the New York Times, here's some examples. Considered the force, Alaki, was considered the force behind a number of plots aimed at killing Americans. Considered the force behind a number of plots. Investigated by the FBI before the attack of Fort Hood. Thought to have influenced the shoe bomber. Alaki's suspected ties to terror plots. Attempted cargo bombings. Influenced a student in London to stab a member of parliament. This sounds like Glenn Beck. She had listened to more than 100 hours of his speeches, inspired the Times Square bomber who failed, inspired several of the five men convicted for planning an attack. Inspiration came from Alaki. That sounds like Glenn Beck. I mean, Glenn Beck never murdered anyone that we know about, and neither did Alaki. But he influenced and inspired people to commit acts of terror, just like Glenn Beck has. And Bill O'Reilly. So, when does Mr. Obama order the assassination of Bill O'Reilly? I mean, he sat there on his program and talked about Tiller the killer, Tiller the killer, Tiller the killer, until he finally found somebody who'd respond to go kill him. The physician. And Beck, God only knows how many people Beck has inspired to acts of terror. We know about one that was heading into San Francisco to blow up an institution and murder as many people as possible. What's the difference here? Will somebody tell me the difference, please? By the government's own workable definitions now, Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly are terrorists who should be executed with a drone, with a Hellfire missile. Watch out, Glenn. Hey, O'Reilly! If you hear a whirring, of course you won't hear anything, but if you do happen to hear a whirring sound, duck and cover! Okay, I just wanted to talk about it. At the bottom of this hour, we are going to open up the lines, and you can win a podcast subscription if you get the right answer in podcast trivia. What? Oh, really? Oh, you've got it? Okay. Oh, yeah, a sponsor this hour. All right. This hour is sponsored by Jay Turley, who says, on this day, 74 years ago, my mom was born. Happy birthday, Mom. Okay, well, you're welcome, Jay. All right, what else we got here? Did you see the... what? Oh, that's not for this. Oh, I see. Okay. Wait a minute. Here it is. The Malloy and Skype chat rooms are sponsoring this hour. This message written by Hugo Alvarda. The message, the Mike Malloy chat room is one of the funniest worlds I have ever visited. Thank you, Malloy chat room. And Skype, Malloy and chat Skype, the Malloy chat room and Skype chat thing. Thanks for the sponsorship. What is that now, Kathy? The chat room is sponsored about 12 hours? Dear God. What'd I say? Last time I did this, I have to stay on the air for another 12 years just to pay them off. Thanks, guys and girls. The Malloy and Skype chat rooms. With a message written by Hugo. The message, the Mike Malloy chat room, is one of the funniest worlds I have ever visited. It is kind of funny in there. You ought to go. Just log on to Ustream and find it and go. One thing, they're very easy to punk, though. I mean, just, you know. Did you happen to see the video of the people on a balcony looking down on the Wall Street... OccupyWallStreet.org protesters. And I know, there's a rumor circulating now that they were drinking their champagne because they were attending a wedding. Right. Great cover story. But there they were. The pompous, privileged Wall Street bastards laughing and chuckling and giggling at the proles down in the street. With their funny little signs and their funny little tents and their funny little chants. There they were sucking their champagne. Did you see that? Have you seen it? As Al Babe writes, they lost our money, trillions, while still profiting more than in any other time in history. We bail them out and they mock us. These people are sociopathic bastards who need their reign to be reined in. And they need to be punished for their illegal, immoral behavior. And to do this, wow, We the people need to teach their pompous asses a lesson. I'm thinking jail time, guillotine. Any other ideas? There's a story going around. These people were part of a wedding at Wall Street, to which I say, and? A wedding on Wall Street? Yeah, I saw that video. And now, there's a warning. Have you heard about this? From the billionaire who is the mayor of, according to the Wall Street Journal, Michael Bloomberg, the mayor, New York City mayor, raised the specter of shutting down a two-week-long demonstration on Wall Street, telling protesters who are speaking out against greed and corruption that the banks deserve support. Oh, Jesus. God, way to go, Michael. Asked directly on his weekly radio show today whether he will allow the protesters to stay indefinitely, Mayor Bloomberg replied, "We'll see." Bloomberg, 69-year-old billionaire mayor of New York, who earned his personal fortune selling financial information to the business community, said, quote, "People have the right to protest, but we also have to make sure that people who don't want to protest can go down the streets unmolested. We have to make sure that while you have a right to say what you want to say, people who want to say something very different have a right to say that as well. That's what's great about this country. The right to protest is part of our culture. It's also true that there are other societal concerns." What the hell does that say? What does that mean? What I just said, what does that mean? The Bloomberg administration, as you know, they're handling the protests has come under a lot of criticism lately, especially the New York Police Department officers, not the blue suited guys, but the white shirted guys, and some of the blue suited ones too. I'm not gonna defend police action that hurts people and arrests people and busts people's heads and puts poison in their faces in order to prevent them from doing what is legally guaranteed by the Constitution again. That goddamn piece of paper, as Bush called it. Okay. Anyway, the Bloomberg administration has been catching a lot of flack, and rightly so. But in his remarks today, Bloomberg suggested that the protesters are terribly misguided in terms of their policy perspective. That's what he said. He said, quote, "The protesters are protesting against people who make $40,000 or $50,000 a year and are struggling to make ends meet. That's the bottom line. Those are the people who work on Wall Street and in the financial sector," end quote. Oh, really? Mr. Mayor, I had no idea.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Can't touch this. Look, man. Can't touch this. You better get a high point.
21 past the hour. After the next break, podcast trivia. So if you want to get online now, 877-996-2556. And if you get the right answer to the trivia question, you win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial-free, every day in your email box. Fairness and accuracy in reporting. Fair.org has this up, among other things. CNN anchors Carol Costello, who I just actively do not like, her smarmy, condescending, patronizing attitude against anything that is not hard right is just sticking in my craw and has for about 5 years now. And Ali Velshi, who, I don't know, he reminds me a lot of the caricature of a house Negro back in the day when there was such a thing, if you know what I'm saying. They were both on the air the other day, and they provided some rare TV coverage of the Occupy Wall Street protest in Lower Manhattan. Here's how it went. Velshi. A group of people protesting Wall Street greed are now screaming abuse after they were arrested over the weekend. The incident happened Saturday in Lower Manhattan. The protesters say they were pepper sprayed, roughed up, and denied food and water. Police defending the arrests saying the marchers blocked traffic and ignored orders to stay on the sidewalks. And here's an eye report from Saturday's demonstration. At one point, you can actually see a protester and police getting into a fight. You see that in the middle. At least 80 people were arrested. Carol Costello.
Of course, what you can't see is what came before the fight.
Velshi, yes, we don't know. Costello.
We don't know. All right, let's head to Atlanta and check in with Reynolds Wolf. Any extreme weather on the horizon?
Carol Costello. God, she's irritating. And from Fair's comment section, from Patricia, CNN's Velshi and friends seem extremely nasty this morning. She's talking about September 28th when reporting, quote, quote, on the Wall Street demonstrations. Velshi made a smarmy comment about how the demonstrators were just now catching on that there were financial problems facing the country. These sons of bitches, boy, I hate them, I'll tell you. All the Velshi and friends trashed the demonstrators because they were, quote, unfocused, because they seem to have many different grievances. They interviewed, quote, quote, a protester identified as Josh from Denver. They ran a soundbite of Josh saying that he had told his boss he had a, quote, family emergency, end quote, so that he'd come to New York City to demonstrate. I'm fairly certain that CNN just added Josh to the growing number of unemployed Americans. I'm fairly certain that the Tea Party demonstrations had more than one cause scribbled on their many placards. I don't remember CNN dismissing them for being unfocused or arriving late to protest the federal deficit. The report was a distasteful display of ganging up and bullying by CNN. It's worse than that, Patricia. It is much worse than that. CNN has turned into, to a great degree, and I mean turned into, it didn't used to be this way, a hothouse of right-wingers who will do anything in their power to out Fox News, Fox News. That's their goal. That's the goal. They're in the basement. MSNBC kicks their ass. Domestically, I'm talking domestically, CNN is a global news leader when you consider CNN International and their reach around the world. They really are. But domestically, they're in third place. So they're going to try these tactics to dump on these protesters, yes, smarmy bastards. Boy, I hate that. I really do. And every time Carol Costello opens her mouth, if it has anything to do with anything about social justice or about progressive politics or about liberalism such as it is, battered and torn these days, she comes on with that haughty, patronizing, arrogant, smirky comment of one sort or another. Well, you don't know what happened before the cameras. And Velshi sits there and lies into the camera. Anybody with a fourth grade education can go to all the websites and take a look at what happened. You can get direct feeds of what's happening. And this moron says, well, the police were beating up on them because they wouldn't stay on the sidewalk. You miserable bastard, like I said. House Negro. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, podcast trivia. So if you're not online and you want to take a shot at it, get on board, 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy. once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy program, brought to you by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. Message written by Hugo Alvarda. The Mike Malloy chat room is one of the funniest worlds I have ever visited. All you have to do to win a one-year subscription to Mloycast or a Malloy program, whatever the hell it is, podcast downloads, get the right answer to our trivia question. Are you ready? Are you ready? All right. Prez. Is that right, Prez?
Yes, Mike. Yes, it is, Prez.
Prez in Santa Rosa, listening on Green 960. All right. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay. As soon as we get the music going, we shall ask you the question. All right. Here we go.
This is exciting, Mike. This is exciting.
Is it? Can you... Do you need to stop and take a Valium?
No. I'm already medicated. Don't worry.
Here we go. This week, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie indicated he might, maybe, perhaps, do which of the following? A, close down the top-rated MTV program New Jersey Shore. B, beat the hell out of Rick Perry if Perry shows up in the Garden State. C, run for president. Or D, enter next summer's Coney Island, New York's hot dog eating contest.
I've missed the first. My other phone was ringing, Mike. Read the first part of the question again for me. I'm sorry.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie this week indicated he might, maybe, perhaps, do which of the following? A, close down the top-rated MTV program New Jersey Shore. B, beat the hell out of Rick Perry if Perry shows up in the Garden State. C, run for president. D, enter next summer's Coney Island, New York's hot dog eating contest.
Oh, God. I'm afraid it's C.
Yeah.
Oh, God, Mike, please.
You made me say that twice.
No, I'm sorry. Oh, God.
I think I better give it to somebody else. No, you got it. All right. All right, Prez, you wanted to comment about what we're talking about here or what?
Well, I sent you an email earlier. I just wanted to distill my thoughts and comments to this. We are just like Argentina, Stalin, Chile. We can be disappeared without anybody knowing who took us, where we are, or when we'll ever be back. No communication, and we can be killed. We can be imprisoned secretly and killed by our own government. What else is left, Mike? That's it.
Well, That's it right there. The apparatus to do all that is certainly in place.
They just showed us an example. They tell us, well, be careful of the backlash against this murder. So they're having us two reasons that they are causing us to be afraid, supposedly. What are we afraid of here? We're cowards. They should be afraid of us, and I think they are. That's why they struck the first blow in this battle.
Well,
this is it, buddy. It's on.
I certainly hope it is. All right, Prez, hold on. Kathy is going to get the pertinent information from you, and congratulations. I'm glad you got the right answer. All right, I have a couple of things here that I want to get to. First, from Joe in Temecula, California. Mike, it seems some in the media still don't really understand why people are amassing on Wall Street to protest. They say they are confused because they don't perceive any clear message coming from the protesters, nor do they see any clear leader. The media is creating this meme that the protesters don't even know why they're there. I'm not so sure this is true. We all know money is what's wrong with our politics and where the money is. Or where is the money? It's on Wall Street. We know Wall Street has its tentacles wrapped around our government and nothing gets passed without Wall Street's stamp of approval. We also know that when Wall Street crashed, they came running the government, which is we, the people, with outstretched hands begging for a handout. We gave them $700 billion of our tax dollars to prop up their failing businesses. We did this because they told us that everything would collapse if we didn't. And what do their banks, and what is their thanks to us? They refuse to loan us money to grow our small businesses and refuse to invest in America to create jobs. Instead, corporations are sitting on over $2 trillion in cash while turning in quarter after quarter of record profits. And what do they want from us in exchange? Even more deregulation and even cheaper labor. Bernie Sanders was on Oberman's program last night, and they discussed the Wall Street protests. Sanders made the point that the Federal Reserve gave over $16 trillion in near zero interest short-term loans to corporations all over the world to prevent them from going belly up. That's $16 trillion guaranteed by we, the taxpayers. And yet, when we ask our government and Wall Street for some help to refinance our mortgages, to help rebuild our infrastructure, to invest in America, to move factories back to America, and help create good-paying jobs, they say no. They won't do it unless we give them even more tax breaks, more subsidies, and slash even more regulations. We all know that a large share of the high price of oil is due to speculation. We know Goldman Sachs is creating financial instruments of mass destruction in the form of derivatives and speculating in commodities. We know they fleeced our homes and are toppling countries overseas with their bad debt deals that are designed to fail. We know Wall Street and big corporations are making money in China and India. We know they couldn't care less about the U.S. and its workers. We know that because the market is up nearly 4,000 points since March of 2009, and yet it does not translate into jobs for Americans. We all know this, and that's why people are massing on Wall Street. Wall Street is the problem. They no longer issue stock to raise capital to then invest that capital in America to build factories, resulting in job creation. Instead, they raise money to invest in China or India, or they just engage in hundreds of millions of microtransactions a day, making money by shuffling paper around. We know what Wall Street thinks of us. They think we don't matter. They don't want to pay us 20 plus an hour so we can make a living when they can pay someone in China $5 a day. Wall Street is trying to break us. They are trying to bring us to our knees so we will accept a few dollars an hour for our labor. And now the people are coming to Wall Street to show them we cannot be broken, and we instead will break them. The people know. The media hasn't quite figured it out yet, but they do know something. But they do know someone got maced. I guess that's a start. Joe in Temecula, California. The movement is starting to metastasize. And I hope it continues. It's one thing to hope it continues. It's something else again to go ahead and get involved. Next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'm going to be in Washington, where another aspect of the counter-revolution is to begin. And I want you to pay as close attention to that one as we are paying to the one in New York. New York is the center of this evil nest of capitalists, whereas Washington is the center of this evil nest of people who are owned by the capitalists and who are destroying the country politically while they destroy it economically. And I think we ought to make it clear at some point. You know, I get tired of people identifying what I'm involved in. I am not involved in a revolution. And I will tell you now that the revolution occurred a long time ago. The revolution occurred right after Barry Goldwater was defeated in 1964. The revolution began, and it was successful with the inauguration of Ronald Reagan in 1980. So the revolution only took about 13 years. But the revolution was successful, and the revolution took away from the American public just about everything that we had been working for all of our lives, the lives of this nation, the life of this nation. So to the people who want to identify what's going on as a revolution, I beg to differ. You dumb bastards don't get it, do you? You media freaks, you commentators who sit there with your multi-hundred-thousand-dollar jobs reporting this crap that your assignment editors and your producers tell you to report on. It is not, what you're witnessing, is not a revolution. That occurred a long time ago. What you are witnessing is a counter-revolution. That is what has begun. And like any counter-revolution, it can be unfocused. It can be extremely diverse. It's not what you media types would like to see. something easy to report on, something that makes your job a little easier. You scum suckers have been riding that horse for so long it's about to die. But let me tell you something, you might want to get this word in your head. You are not witnessing a revolution. That has already occurred. You are witnessing the beginning of the counter-revolution. And counter-revolutions, by definition, historically and otherwise, are messy. They are unfocused. But they have a general objective. And that is to undo the damage that the revolution left in its wake. Keep that in mind, CNN and ABC and CBS and NBC and New York Times and Washington Post and all the rest of you. We'll be right back. For the hour, this hour has been sponsored by a gang, you know, a gang. I think some of them are probably involved in nefarious activities, but the gang is called the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. The message that they sent in with this, this looks like a ransom note, but the message written was written by Hugo, and it says, "The Mike Malloy chat room is one of the funniest worlds I have ever visited." Really? It is. You ought to try it sometime. Just log on to Ustream and go to Mike Malloy Show. They really are a funny group. So, anyway, thanks, guys and girls, for yet another our sponsorship of the Malloy program from the chat room and Skype setup. Coming up next hour, it's going to be a little bit, I don't know, some of you will not like it. And for those of you who listen to this program a lot, that's really saying something. Because Michelle Bachmann is going to be the target again, along with Uncle Clarence Thomas and his old lady. And since it'll be late hour on this program, the not necessarily the language, I'm not going to cuss a lot, but the implications and the innuendos are going to be thick and very disturbing, especially if you are a real follower of the Christian faith. So just a warning. It's going to be a bit intense. Chris is driving in Oregon listening on Sirius. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I was just thinking when you were talking earlier about the assassination and SEAL Team 6 and all that stuff. I'd never heard of Steel Team 6 until, you know, Osama bin Laden was killed. And then they never told anybody, you know, who they are or what they did or any of that. And then they're all mysteriously killed. How do we even know they ever even existed?
Well, the SEAL, the Navy SEAL operation, has been around, I think, since World War II. Is that right?
Well, I know that.
Oh, you mean SEAL Team 6.
We don't know who these people were. We were just told that these are the people that did it. They didn't say who they were.
Right.
And then they all mysteriously die.
Well, no, wait. Not quite true, Chris. We don't know.
Okay.
The 32 people that were killed, I think it was 32 on that helicopter, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever, were, we don't keep track of body counts, of course, were Afghans. There were also some non-SEALs on that aircraft. And of the members of the SEAL organization that died in that aircraft, or in that shoot down. You're right in that we have no way of knowing, whether any of those people were involved in the hit on Osama bin Laden. But the way the U.S. CIA and certain aspects of the military work, it's just incredible coincidence that, first of all, they were on a helicopter that none of them should have been on. SEAL team members do not fly in large groups. They do not get on. I think that was a National Guard helicopter, somebody told me. That's not how they operate unless they are directly ordered to do that. Now, it raises the question, once again, is there any there to begin with? And if there is some there, then the question becomes, who ordered these people on board that helicopter and why? In violation of the SEAL organization's own rules of survival. They just don't do that. So, you start looking.
It kind of brings me.
Go ahead.
It kind of brings me back to, it's like there's so much secrecy. We know they lie.
Right.
And there's so much secrecy. What can you believe?
Well,
they say they did something. They say that this happened. It's like, well, how do we even know?
Right. Just like the guy that they shot today, they executed today, who was a guest at dinner or something, a meeting at the Pentagon, not too long after 9/11. So, you don't know. We live now, I think it's fair to say, or correct to say, Chris, we live in a national security state that is slowly locking down. And there are certain people always in this kind of a lockdown that need to be either silenced or silenced permanently. And I think we're seeing some of this. I don't mean to go all bonkers conspiratorial on anyone, but, like we all know, you don't need to be a weatherman to figure out which way the wind is blowing. Hey, listen, I got to leave it there, Chris. Thank you. I do appreciate you checking in. You don't need to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. All right, stick around. Like I said, I have a feeling next hour is going to be difficult for our listeners to deal with. But, it's talk radio. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. I'm going to get to the insurance thing here in just a second, but, you know, I certainly don't mean any disrespect here. He said with his tongue firmly planted in his cheek and anywhere else he could put it. But on Wednesday, a couple days ago, Michelle Bachmann, you know, out on tour to be become either she wants to be president of the United States or she's trying to make at some point make as much money as Sarah Palin is just gouging out of the body politic. Is Sarah Palin a piece of work? And do you believe that people really took seriously her candidacy when she ran with McCain? Poor old McCain standing there with his little chicken arms, you know, looking at her going, what? Her? Oh, no. But he didn't have anything to say about her selection. But, you know, and then she talking about running for president. Ooh, ooh, Michelle, please, or not Michelle, but Sarah, please don't keep us waiting any longer. We need to know. Oh, honey, we just want you to run for president. So anyway, Bachmann is taking up that slack in the American political system where you've got to have somebody, a white female who is absolutely insane running for president. It seems to be what is needed. A white female who's absolutely insane running for president. Right? Now, if you're a feminist, please don't send me an email. All right. You know what I'm talking about. For God's sake. Come on. Be real. Well, Michelle Bachmann, last Wednesday, she is making the rounds that all these Republicans are making. And that is going to this nest of crazed Christian fundamentalists who really think they're getting a college education. And that's at Liberty University in Virginia. Jerry Falwell's hidey hole. Of course, he's dead. But, you know, I guess his son runs it now, Jerry Falwell Jr. Junior. But I wonder if they have his body down there lying in state like they did with Lenin. You know, all mummified up and under glass. I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, not to be disrespectful of Michelle Bachmann or her phony-ass crazed religion, I get the feeling when I listen to her talk now that she's actually had sexual intercourse with Jesus. And I think it was forcible rape. Well, that's kind of redundant. I think it was forcible intercourse. At least that's the impression I get when I listen to her say, as she did in front of these poor creatures who are attending, quote, college, end quote, at Liberty University, when she said, quote, even though I hadn't been a drinker, even though I never did drugs, even though I hadn't been chasing around, you know, that means getting laid, it didn't matter. I was a sinner, so I radically abandoned myself to Jesus Christ. What does that sound like to you? I radically abandoned myself. Now, if you're a Christian, don't send me an email and say, well, Mike, you don't understand because you are such a closed-minded freak, you atheist slob. Please don't bother. You know, I mean, people who are much more creative in their attacks on me because I see all religion as garbage have already written to me. So don't, you know, don't waste your time. But to stand there in front of 10,000 students, I wonder if this is all voluntary. I'm sure it probably was. Michelle Bachmann's coming. Oh, Lord have mercy. So they all head for the auditorium. She addressed them for half an hour. She was talking about her personal values and her responsibilities. In her speech, she made no reference, apparently, here to any of the other candidates who are running for the office of the presidency. But I think Bachmann has made it very clear that were she to become in some horrific, seismic, I don't know, dimensional shift, something unbelievable happened, and this rapture-believing, snake-talking freak became President of the United States. Now, can you imagine? Something occurs in the Middle East. Iran decides to openly threaten Israel. And Bachman's advisors are saying, okay, now's the time. You got to pull the trigger on Iran. Nuke them. No, I can't, she says. Something inside her. God only knows what it would be. Something inside her says, no, I can't. And her husband says, nuke them, honey. And Michelle says, okay, I must be subservient to my lord and master, my husband. Okay, and breaks out the football and starts reading the codes. This is insanity. In a rational society, first of all, people like Bachman and these religious freaks would not exist. We wouldn't have people on the radio. And they have huge audiences, radio audiences that focus on the family and all these crazed Armageddonist, Dominionist, rapture-ready freaks. In a rational society, they wouldn't exist. But in even a partially rational society, you would not have a candidate like Michelle Bachman. I mean, just, or any of these religious nutcases. It just would not happen. It would not. Rick Perry. Yeah, he executes in the name of his Lord Jesus Christ, right? The audience that loves Ron Paul cheers in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ when they talk about, let him die! Yeah, oh yeah, let him go into heaven. We would not have these kinds of religiously insane people running were this a rational society. But we do not live there any longer. We live in a totally nonsensical, irrational, cartoon-like society where someone can stand in front of college students or young kids that think they're college students or not. They're not there getting education. They are there getting whatever education they've had removed and replaced with the word of God. That's what happens when you go to Liberty University. But to stand there in front of these students and say, I radically abandoned myself to Jesus Christ. Now, excuse me, but if that doesn't sound overtly, deliberately sexual, I don't know what does. And what was the other, the YouTube thing that's out there now where she's talking about she's hot for Jesus. I'm hot for Jesus. Ooh. Baby, come on. This is insanity. I'm hot for Jesus. I radically abandoned myself to Jesus. What does this... I mean, if these are not clear indicators of madness, what is? What is? Somebody tell me. What is more insane than that? I'm hot for Jesus. I don't know. I don't know. She says Obamacare is the first time in the history of our nation that we have taxpayer-subsidized abortions. That's not true. There are specific prohibitions against that. But Bachman is a goddamn liar. So when she talks about she wants to have sex with Jesus, or she already has, or she's hot for him, or she's abandoned himself, what the hell is she talking about? She's not talking about the gospel or the ministry of a rabbi that walked around the Middle East 2,000 years ago. That's not what she's talking about. Of course not. Christianity has become so radically destroyed, corrupted, befouled by people like her that it is now unrecognizable to anyone who grew up with a traditional, like I did, Christian Sunday school background. I don't know how they continue to get away with it. I just wish that this Christian Messiah really existed so he could just reach down his mighty hand and start pinching the heads off these freaks and tossing them into hell. To the beanpole dames in the magazines, you ain't it, miss thing. Give me a sister, I can't resist her. Red beans and rice didn't miss her. Some knucklehead tried to diss, cause his girls are on my list. He had game, but he chose to hit him, and I pull up quick to get with him. So ladies, if the butt is round, and you want a triple X throwdown, dial 1-900-MIX-A-LOT and kick them nasty thoughts. Baby got back. Baby got back.
60,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. Listen, no offense to Christians, especially you hardcore crazy people, but you know, you're, when you have your presidential candidates out there indicating through body language and innuendo that they are having sex with your Messiah, I mean, come on, that's just a little creepy, isn't it? Or is it standard church blab now to have some freak like Michelle Bachmann stand up in front of audiences, whether they're in church or not, and talk about how she's hot for Jesus or she radically abandoned herself to Jesus Christ? What does that stuff mean? What does that mean? Is that not, I mean, everything in this society has been highly sexualized, even religion. Even religion, only it's a kind of bondage and discipline kind of sexualization. You know what I mean? It's not just fun, playful sex. When she talks about she's hot for Jesus and she abandoned herself to Jesus Christ, what does that mean? Chain me up? Beat me? Kick me? Make me go to Liberty University and give stupid-ass the lectures? What does that mean? She said, Obamacare is the first time in the history of our nation that we have taxpayer-subsidized abortions, which, of course, is untrue on a couple of levels there. There was a time in this country where people on welfare could get abortions, and they were taxpayer-subsidized. And Obamacare, so-called, has nothing to do with that. So two lies in one quick sentence. She added, when it comes to what she calls Obamacare, it's almost like saying she's hot for Jesus. I mean, you can just, you can see it. I mean, every time I see that clip, that video clip, where she's up there undulating her hips, talking about she's hot for Jesus, my God, that even embarrasses me. Please. She says, when it comes to Obamacare, and I've been involved in this fight for some time now, I will tell you, unless we repeal it in 2012, we will have socialized medicine for the United States' future. Socialized medicine. This woman is goddamn insane. If Obamacare, her term, is anything, it's not that. It's the complete opposite. What it does, I mean, does she not understand what the individual mandate is that forces people to, are you ready, Michelle? Buy insurance! You have to buy it! You freak! Too much time having sex with your Messiah has ruined your brains! And made you unable to understand one sip. What does Michelle Bachmann think individual mandate means? What does that mean, Ms. Bachmann? Individual mandate, forced, individual force, you're forced to buy. That's why this is in court right now. But she continues her drivel in front of these bobblehead. Can you imagine a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old going to Liberty University, Jerry Falwell's horror house? What are these people, what kind of a quote, education, end quote, do they come out with? We had history today. Yeah, what'd you learn? Well, the Jews ran across the Red Sea after Moses parted the Red Sea, and then they wandered around the desert. How long ago was that? 7,000 years. What before that? Nothing. Anyway, the applause kept coming. She insisted that conservatives have to stand against federal takeovers of U.S. industries, including the automotive industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry. Would that it were true, Miss I Slept With Jesus. Would that it were true. But it's not. And then she adds the punchline, quote, and we can't settle when it comes to America standing up for our greatest ally in the world, Israel. Their greatest ally in the world, Israel? Really? Not Canada? Not the UK, not, it's Israel? I'll be damned. Bachman, raped by Jesus. Astonishing. I am glad to see that yesterday, a handful of Democratic lawmakers, about 20 of them House Democrats, are calling for a federal investigation into another freak that has made it the very pinnacle of political power in this country. Yes, political power, and that would be Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. 20 House Democrats sent a letter to the Judicial Conference of the United States. That's the entity that sets the guidelines for the administration of federal courts. And they're asking for an investigation. I'll tell you why when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour. So arguably, Clarence Thomas is one of the worst, if not the worst, Supreme Court justice ever to sit on the bench. The guy is just a sack of misery. He really is. And his wife is even worse. Between the two of them, this is the gruesome twosome where it concerns everything that's good and generous and nice in this country. These two are outstanding examples of greed, selfishness, destruction of this republic. It's just astonishing. So finally, 20 House Democrats have sent a letter to the Judicial Conference of the United States. That's the organization that sets the guidelines for the administration of the federal courts. And the letter is requesting that the conference refer the matter of Clarence Thomas's noncompliance with the Ethics in Government Act of 1978, refer it all to the Department of Justice. And what it's all about is Clarence Thomas has been failing to report hundreds of thousands of dollars on annual financial disclosure forms that he's required by law. Now, this freak has said a couple of times that, well, you know, the forms are too difficult to fill in. I didn't know how to fill it. Give me a goddamn break. You may be a dumb moron, Judge Clarence Thomas, but surely when there's a line on the form that says, how much did your old lady make last year, or your wife, or whatever, your husband, you know what to do, don't you, bro? You just write in the number. But that was too much for you? Yeah, be careful, Clarence. You don't want to, you give some of the white racists a whole box of ammunition there, do you? Huh? Come on, come on. The gang of 20 is led by House Rules Committee ranking member Representative Louise Slaughter, Democrat of New York. Other members who have signed the letter are Jesse Jackson Jr., Gwen Moore, Mike Honda, Earl Blumenauer, Christopher Murphy, John Garamendi, Pete Stark, Paul Raul Grijalva, John Oliver, Jan Schakowsky, and so on and so on. John Conyers, Keith Ellison, blah, 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 blah. You'll notice that there are black and white folk in that group of people, of the group of 20. So, you know, as soon as Clarence and his old lady start screaming, racism! I think that will sound rather hollow. Well, not to the bobbleheads. To the bobbleheads, it'll be, yup, 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 that's it. There it is again. Yup, yup, yup. The letter requesting that the conference refer all this to the Department of Justice outlines how throughout his 20-year tenure on the Supreme Court, can you believe Uncle Clarence has been there for 20 years? Oh, anyway, that during that 20-year tenure, Thomas routinely checked a box titled "None" on his annual financial disclosure form that asked how much his wife had received in income. None.
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 None. None.
None.
None. 20 times he's done that. And in the 20 years, he maintains that he didn't know how to fill out the forms. Well, I don't know. You know, I'm from Georgia. I look at a form and I see a question and then a box. Yes, no, some, none, amount. It's too confusing! Ah! In reality, this letter from the 20 House Democrat states, she earned nearly $700,000 from the Heritage Foundation from 2003 to 2007 alone.
Oh, well, I guess I just forgot about that.
I mean, let this sink in. Aside from my snarky comments, just let it sink in. A Supreme Court justice whose spouse made almost $1 million in 4 years, and he repeatedly checks none on the form that says how much income did your wife have. Now, what do you call that? What do you call that? Okay, real quick. A lie. No. That's it. A lie. He is a liar. He's a United States Supreme Court justice who helped appoint George W. Bush, and he's a goddamn liar, totally and completely. If he will lie on his financial disclosure form, he will lie on anything, to anybody, about any subject. And he's a Supreme Court justice. How does that make you feel, truth seeker? Let us sink in for a second. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, that's enough. Representative Slaughter said, quote, "It is reasonable in every sense of the word." See, here we go with this polite language. And no offense, Louise, but, you know, why don't you just stand up and say, this is a lying son of a bitch who's on the Supreme Court. Why don't you do that? Everybody forgive your use of the SOB word. Why don't one of you people, Dick Cheney used to go into the Senate and use the F word. So just somebody call it what it is. But no, Louise Slaughter says, quote, "It is reasonable in every sense of the word to believe that a member of the highest court in the land should know how to properly disclose almost $700,000 in income." And then she took a deep breath and went on, "To not be able to do so is suspicious. And according to law, requires further investigation." Oh, my God. "To accept Justice Thomas's explanation without doing the required due diligence would be irresponsible," end quote. Why do they talk like that? Why do they talk like that? Why doesn't Louise Slaughter? Or now, okay, maybe she's too prim and proper. How about Representative Jesse Jackson Jr.? He's from Chicago. Why doesn't he just stand up and say, "Harump, listen up. Listen up. Please, everybody, listen up. We got a brother on the court who's a goddamn liar, who's a cheat, a sneak, who takes money. His old lady takes money. He rules on cases that his old lady's involved in taking money about. Kick his ass off. Come on, Jesse, you can do it. You're in a safe district. You can talk like that. You can go ahead and get away with it. White man did that. They'd accuse a white man of everything except having a mother. But, you know, come on. You're a black man. Say it! Please. Somebody call out these bastards. I don't care if they're on the Supreme Court or in the Senate or in the boardrooms. Call them out for what they are. What is this language? What is this? Oh, well, you know, he's a liar. He's a cheat, a sneak, a thug, a punk. Why doesn't somebody just stand up and say it? I'll say it. I just said it. Oh, yeah. The letter from the 20 members of the House also cites the June report in the New York Times indicating that Thomas may have regularly benefited from the use of a private yacht and airplane owned by real estate magnate Harlan Crow, and failed to disclose the travel as a gift or travel reimbursement. May have. What does that mean? May have used a yacht or an airplane and an airplane. What does that mean? May have. You don't know? Then get it out of the goddamn letter. If you do know, then make it a declarative statement. Clarence Thomas used. But I don't know. We just don't do it anymore, do we? But I'll tell you what. You let someone like Barack Obama ran through Affordable Health Care Act, and all of a sudden he's a socialist, he's a communist, he is destroying the free enterprise system, he is this, he is that. You know, the Republicans, he's providing money for abortions, he. Right? Bachman and the rest of these monsters will say that. They will call Barack Obama anything but breathing. And they do. Constantly. But Clarence Thomas, some of these right-wingers, he may have gotten involved with non-compliance of the Ethics in Government Act of 1978. So perhaps, maybe, possibly, you know, this is kind of suspicious. So, is there a chance to further investigate? What the hell? What the hell? Current law requires the judicial conference, the ones that set the rules about how the federal courts should run themselves, including, of course, the members of those courts. Current law requires the judicial conference to refer to the attorney general. Any judge the conference, quote, has reasonable cause to believe has willfully failed to file a report or has willfully falsified or willfully failed to file information required to be reported, end quote. Now, that's what the judicial conference is required to do. And you know what? It seems to me that Clarence, Uncle Clarence, has done all three of those things. I mean, if it looks like a skunk, waddles like a skunk, smells like a skunk, it is a skunk! As far as Clarence Thomas's old lady is concerned, you know, if she wants to work, she can go ahead and work. That's a lot of couples feel that they have to have both people work in order to pay the bills. Kathy and I feel that way. A lot of people have to do that. It's not so much the fact that Clarence Thomas's old lady is working. It's the fact of what she does for a living. Does she work as a waitress? No. Is she a corporate executive? No. Is she in the military? No. What does she do? She works for the Heritage Foundation. Well, so what? Well, the Heritage Foundation was a prominent opponent of the Affordable Care Act. Or as Michelle Bachman calls it, the Obamacare. That is an issue that the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on very soon, possibly by this coming summer. Or at least it will be presented to the Supreme Court. They may have to wait. Supreme Court begins hearing cases the first Monday in October. When is that, Kathy? It's Monday coming. So they probably, it'll be presented to the court. It'll probably be ruled on by next summer. So the fact that Clarence Thomas's old lady has raked in hundreds of thousands of dollars from one of the leading opponents of the Affordable Health Care Act. And now that is going to appear in front of this slob to be ruled upon as to his constitutionality, and what? Nothing? Nobody? Well, 20. 20? Why not 100? Why not 435 members of the House signing a letter to the Judicial Conference of the United States asking for an investigation? Why just 20? Oh, that's right. I forget. This is the United States of America, 2011. Our system is so corrupted, so broken, so destroyed, so perverted that nobody gives it that much thought when five people determine that the vote counting shall stop. And the person who appeared to have the most votes when the vote counting was stopped shall now be the president of the United States for the next 4 years. And then 4 years later, the Supreme Court isn't even needed any longer, just a matter of jiggering the machines. So the criminal enterprise gets another 4 years. And now we have a Supreme Court justice who has no problem lying, blatantly, flat out, unequivocally lying on his financial disclosure form. How much money your old lady make? None. $700,000 in 4 years. Well, that's, you know, it's easy to overlook that. You can either forget it or you can look at the form and say, well, damn, this is too hard for me to fill in. I don't quite understand. Let me see. It says here, did your spouse make any money? And then there's a box, yes or no. Oh, let me see. What does that mean? I'll just check no, because I can't figure it out. That's where we are. That's where we are. Hey, where are you going to be October 6th? I hope you're going to be in Washington, D.C. at Freedom Plaza. It's going to be a camp out. Yeah, it'll be fun. A lot of people are going to gather. There's going to be speechifying and music and a lot of camaraderie. And some people are going to camp out. Now, it's my understanding that, you know, camping out may not be allowable. I don't know who makes the rules that you can't be an urban homesteader or you can't camp out, enjoy a nice, cool autumn evening under the stars. But you never know. Things are getting so crazy in this country now. But anyway, if you are, if you haven't firmed up your plans for next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whatever, starting next Thursday, if you haven't firmed up your plans yet, and you got a couple of bucks, you can catch a hound and get up there. Or, I don't know, maybe you've got some frequent flyer miles, or, you know, everybody contribute to a gas pool and head for D.C. and, you know, show your patriotism, your real patriotism, your belief that people have a right to self-governance without the interference of an elitist class that comprises about 0.1% and now dominates our political system, our judicial system, our economic system, our medical system. And maybe you've decided that that doesn't, you know, sit so well anymore. Maybe you're tired of having a Supreme Court justice who can lie on his financial disclosure forms, just blatantly lie, and then try to hide the lie by saying, oh, I don't know, I can't figure it out. You know, maybe you're tired of that. Maybe you're tired of a political party that is as openly fascist as anything we've seen since Italy in the 20s. Maybe you're tired of another political party that is as openly cowardly as any political party we've ever seen in this country. I don't know. I know I am. I'm tired of it. I'm sick to my stomach of it. What did Jefferson say about, you know, the people have a right to change the government when the government no longer is responsive to the needs, demands, concerns, cares of the governed? Something like that. Well, boy, I'm glad it's Friday night. Have a good weekend, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Just like my mama said, say goodnight, Kathy.